is the singular thing that's holding this entire ecosystem back. I feel like a lot of people are still playing PvP. Like I said, if we have no bridges, this ecosystem will unfortunately just dry up. We're doing stuff that ecosystems are just dreaming of. It will be the most secure Ethereum bridge built, period. And it will not be able to be done anywhere else.
Wild.
Just ask Ren Beefy.
The launch team wishes you good luck and Godspeed.
Space Monkeys, blasting off with Sean, the Web3 philosopher. He's chief mad scientist at Polytope Labs, a guy who's pushing the limits of interoperability with equal parts creativity, defiance, and a lot of hard work. Sean, welcome to the show.
It's really, really nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
I hear your work and your name in the mouths of many people.
It's amazing.
Kind of curious, like, what is this driving force behind you, this interest and this occupation with Web3? Where did it start and why do you think it keeps you going?
So I would say I got nerd sniped by this whole blockchain thing back in 2017, when I think for the first time I realized that Bitcoin was not an MLM scheme, but it was actually software. And it was software that enabled this radically inclusive financial system. And I say this as a person who lives in Nigeria, where we've been essentially locked out of the global financial system. It's very hard for you to make money, you know, legally. You know, if you're trying to send money to Nigeria, your bank will have you go through all these hoops before that payment ever gets cleared. And at the same time, it's even harder to spend money in Nigeria. So, for instance, you can't do something simple as paying for Spotify in Nigeria if you have a Nigerian card. Like, there's just no bridges out of our financial system into the global economy, you know.
I see.
And so having this system where there is no need for boundaries just blew my mind. And it just became my obsession ever since 2017. So today, it continues to keep me going in realizing this vision of this radically inclusive financial system and the hope that, you know, it will bring more people, you know, into the global financial stage.
Okay, all right. So I think I see the connection there with the bridges.
Yes.
And making sure everybody can get together and exchange.
Exactly. I mean, like, so here's another sort of thing I've been thinking about recently, which is this idea of geographic scaling, right? Let's look at what's currently happening in the ecosystem. We're seeing, you know, the BNB chain getting a lot of users in China. We're seeing the Polygon chain getting a lot of users in India. Mm. We're seeing Optimism and Arbitrum getting a lot of users in the US.
Mm.
But if these chains end up, you know, having these geographically, you know, situated communities, and they do not have bridges between each other, then didn't we just, like,
just do the same thing?
We just got back to the same problem, you know?
Okay.
So these bridges are very critical infrastructure that will allow value to flow everywhere.
Mm.
You know, people from China and India can, you know, interoperate, still using their own trust systems, but are now bridged to each other.
Right. What happens to a place that doesn't have bridges to the rest of the world?
It's cut off.
Mm-hmm.
It dries up and withers.
Okay.
You know, and I can say that from experience living in Nigeria. It just dries up and withers. But bridges, you know, bring in that life. And I think we're kind of feeling the same thing in Polkadot, you know?
Yeah.
We don't have those bridges and it feels like we're kind of drying up.
That's interesting. Totally.
Yeah. So it's basically what happens.
So what brought you to the Polkadot tech stack?
Right. So I joined Parity in 2018. And actually at the time, I was super interested in Ethereum.
Hmm.
But I was more interested in, you know, the infrastructure of Ethereum, making it scale, making it cheaper, making it private. But of course, Parity left the whole Ethereum scene, you know, with such a dramatic haste. And the entire team was just moved on to Substrate and Polkadot. And actually, I didn't know what all this stuff were at the time.
Yeah.
But it was like, hey, we're no longer doing Ethereum. We're now doing this thing. See if you can make sense of it. And you know, it was pretty interesting. You know, Substrate was this framework that took the learnings of building all these different blockchain clients and sort of crystallizing that into a generalized purpose, you know, framework for blockchains.
Sure.
And I found that interesting. I mean, I didn't really get Polkadot at the time, but I mean, a framework for blockchains sounds like a net positive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, I started contributing to Substrate and then slowly also picking up Polkadot as well. And then starting to realize, oh, wow, this is actually a much better solution to the scalability problem rather than, of course, trying to ZK everything mindlessly, you know. I think around 2019, 2020, I sort of understood the Polkadot vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, started to now do more in the ecosystem. And of course, I left in 2021 because I wanted to see how this technology was being applied at the parachain layer.
Okay.
I think there are interesting applications for this technology, and I'm eager to see more of it.
What was your role at Parity just before you left?
So I was a core dev. So basically just, you know, maintaining the Substrate code base, you know, doing feature requests, doing bug fixes.
Gotcha.
Working with the research team, doing implementations as well.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you left, what was the first thing you did outside of Parity?
So actually the first thing I did was to start Polytope Labs. So I started Polytope Labs in 2021.
Understood. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, basically trying to do like meetups and try to like grow the protocol community back home. That was actually very successful, somewhat. It's crazy because we now have 4 developers from that time in the fellowship, in the Polkadot fellowship.
All right.
I don't think any, and I'm not trying to shit on anybody, but like, I don't think any sort of hackathon or any sort of, you know, education, reach out, outreach has been able to produce fellowship members.
Wow.
And we didn't get funding from the fellowship, from the treasury.
Sure.
You know, so.
There's a measure of success, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, It's exciting. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. And we're still trying to build stuff for the ecosystem.
Right. Well, let's talk about the state of things right now. What are the state? What's the state of bridging and interoperability? We could talk Polkadot, but maybe also in the entire industry. What do you see?
I think that lots, you know, outside the ecosystem, maybe apart from Cosmos, people aren't still really, you know, they don't still get this idea of interoperability. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people are still playing PvP. They don't really get that. It's not, you know, it's not Polygon versus ZK Sync, guys. It's actually blockchain versus fiat.
Yeah, right.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, you know, it's amazing how we can get so small-minded and just start to throw these kinds of, you know, children fights, honestly, on Twitter.
Yeah.
And so interoperability is not a thing that, like, for instance, Ethereum is thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these roll-ups, but there is no single team that's trying to fix roll-up interoperability. So they will start to run into problems there as well.
Right.
Cosmos, of course, they're big on interoperability. Polkadot as well is big on interoperability. And I think that we're the best situated team to actually make real interoperability happen. You know, because of our shared security.
Sure.
Because of Spree as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the things that will make interoperability, you know, take interoperability to the next level, honestly.
Uh-huh. Whenever somebody says Spree, I just have to ask them, how do you describe what Spree will be?
I can describe it technically.
Okay.
And I can just describe it as a high level. I think Gav did that high level description really well. So maybe I can just do a technical, like.
Sure.
So essentially, Spree, you can think of it as this secure enclave within your runtime.
Yeah.
The reason you need this enclave is because parachains can lie about what they're doing.
Yeah.
They can change their runtime code to do something else, even though it was doing, you know, something correctly before.
Mm-hmm.
This is a problem. Because if they can change their runtime code at will, then they can, you know, custody some funds and just lie that they don't have it anymore.
Sure.
So Spree sort of makes them locked into some specific runtime code.
Mm-hmm.
And so only Spree transactions can change that state, that they can't change it. The parachain can't change it. In fact, that code is not, it's not governed by the parachain. It's governed by all the parachains that opt into that code.
Right.
So if that code were to be changed, all the parachains that use it will have to agree to change it.
Right.
So, you know, Rob also uses this word of, you know, enforced or protected trade routes, meaning that, like, you know, this piece of code is securing all these parachain code bases, all these parachain states.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, if you don't have Spree, you basically have to trust the parachain you're talking to will not try to rug you.
Right. But we don't have Spree.
But we don't have Spree right now.
Right, right.
But eventually we will.
That's interesting on interoperability. How about bridges? What's the state of bridges from your eyes?
So I think that the only thing we're lacking right now is Beefy.
Yeah.
And Beefy is supposed to be this thing that makes bridges to every other ecosystem just so much more cheaper. Basically makes our consensus proofs, makes the Polkadot consensus proofs cheap to verify.
How? What do you mean by cheap?
Cheap as in, like, it won't cost a lot of gas, for instance.
Okay.
Maybe on Ethereum.
Mm.
You know, that translates to, like, really cheap to maintain bridges. You know, you can imagine I'm maintaining a bridge and I'm paying, what, $1,000 a day, and people are just sending $5 using the bridge. Like, that's not economical. That's
sure.
not a business.
Right.
It's a charity.
Okay.
So this is why we need Beefy to make those bridges very cheap, so we can support users from just moving any kind of amount through the bridge, and it's still cheap to maintain.
So where are the bridges? What are the bridges you're most interested in building?
Mostly ETH, honestly. I don't think there's any other exciting.
Polkadot to ETH?
Polkadot to ETH.
Or ETH to everything?
Polkadot 2 ETH to all the rollups on ETH.
Okay. What's your biggest obstacle to making this happen so far?
ETH itself is the obstacle.
Okay.
Honestly.
All right.
You know, I would say that the ETH team, they've done a good job of making the ETH consensus ridiculously impossible to verify, but, you know, we've somehow been able to hack it. It's amazing, actually, that it's possible.
Okay.
The thing is, though, is that this, our approach, and we, you know, we recently published this protocol, ZK Caspar, that will allow parachains specifically, because like I said, this is not going to be possible in any other ecosystem, to verify the full consensus proofs for ETH.
Okay.
Basically, it's like taking the beacon chain client, just running it on a parachain.
Right. And so, let's maybe get some context here, because what a lot of people are familiar right now is the Snow Bridge.
Yeah.
This long-awaited bridge between Polkadot and Ethereum. In the end, there actually does seem to be still some trust in that system.
It appears so. I mean, I had written about this before, and I think there's also this very popular blog by Presswitch, the Nomad guy, and he does this like analysis of the Altair Lite Client protocol in Ethereum. And the gist of it is that, you know, first off, this Altair Lite Client is essentially a committee of, you know, validators that are subsampled. So right now Ethereum has, what, 700K validators?
Okay.
That's expensive to verify, like, naively.
Yeah, right.
So, okay, but we do need Lite clients. How do we fix this, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, I know. We'll just subsample the validators and then make them sign the headers, and you can just, you know, use these validator signatures.
Okay.
But then, of course, that introduces new problems, because these validator signatures, they are not the same as the full Ethereum security.
Okay.
It's a subsample.
It's just like a council, agreeing that this is true?
It's a multisig.
Okay. Multisig on the state of Ethereum?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, okay.
But it's like a protocol layer multisig, you know.
Okay.
And to make matters worse, there's no, you know, slashing condition for this multisig, you know.
Okay.
I don't want to get technical into too much, but in proof of stake, there's this thing called safety. Right. In order to achieve safety meaning that there will not be two conflicting views of the network that are finalized.
Yeah.
Which is bad for everyone, like, really, you know, even full nodes of the network, not just like clients.
Mm-hmm.
And how you enforce safety is that you have the slashing condition where if people do double sign, they lose their stake.
Right. Okay. You know? Mm-hmm.
But then if you have a protocol that is trying to guarantee, a view, a perspective of the Ethereum network state, but doesn't have slashing, then is it really safe?
Right.
It's not. So that's the risks associated with this Altair-like client protocol.
I see.
And it's clear that if we want to have really trustless bridges to Ethereum, we just need to verify the full beacon chain consensus. 700,000 validators of signatures.
Right. So this is huge. How do you do this? Economically and efficiently.
Yeah. Efficiently, actually, is the main key factor here. And this is where ZK comes in, right?
Mm.
And I feel like, you know, ZK is good for a handful of things.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily generalized VMs, but stuff like consensus proofs, just like privacy, this is where ZK starts to really shine. So with ZK, we're essentially able to get rid of the most expensive part of the verification, which is the public key aggregation.
Okay.
So, you know, the beacon chain uses the BLS signature scheme, which has this property that the public keys are aggregatable. If I had a lot of public keys from different people, I can aggregate those public keys and still be able to verify the signatures from all these different people.
Okay.
But I just only need to know the aggregate public key. So it turns out that you can actually use, you know, the sort of snark approach to verify aggregated public keys. In the sense that I don't need to know the individual public keys.
Mm-hmm.
I just have this commitment, this very, you know, lightweight commitment. It's really just like 48 bytes.
Okay.
And with this commitment and some snark proof, I can verify that some aggregated public key forms a subset to my commitment.
Interesting.
So it's like a membership proof.
Okay.
So if we're able to do that, then we've gotten rid of the most expensive part of this whole verification process. Signature verification is pretty cheap, right? Like, it's like we will have these host functions eventually. You know, there's tons of people talking about this. I think the PPP for this just recently got merged as well. So signature verification is cheap, but public key aggregation is very expensive. But now that this snark exists, we can now verify, you know, the full Ethereum consensus proofs.
Okay, that's interesting. So it's like compressing these 70,000 or whatever you said.
700,000.
It's a crazy number. Right.
This is real. You know, you can go check the Beacon Chain website.
Yeah.
And that number just keeps going up every day.
Wow.
you know, we now have the ability to verify these proofs and, you know, basically create this trustless connection to Ethereum. It will be the most secure Ethereum bridge built, period. And it will not be able to be done anywhere else.
Wild. Okay. And then it's not only poked out to Ethereum, but also you can use this for Ethereum to all these rollups.
Exactly.
As well.
We can read this. I mean, all these rollups, they commit their state to Ethereum. And so because we can read the Ethereum state, we can read the rollup state indirectly.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Okay. And they're going to be able to read each other more efficiently as well.
Exactly.
Holy crap.
You know, okay. We can basically start to use Polkadot as this relay chain for rollup communication.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's just really because like the Ethereum L1 is so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So you can then just use this external chain to do this message routing facade. And like, I think Vitalik actually also recently talked about this in his recent blog.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy times.
What stages is that? Is this philosophy? Is this on paper?
I like that you say philosophy. Yeah, no, it's still in research. So here's the thing. This SNARK was actually designed by the Web3 Foundation. Foundation researchers actually had designed this for Polkadot.
Okay.
So that we could make Polkadot's proofs very, very cheap to verify.
Okay.
But because, you know, it's still just BLS signatures, and you know, Ethereum also uses BLS signatures, there's a way we can contort and twist this protocol and make it work for Ethereum as well.
Wow.
And so we're still researching, you know, this contortion.
Okay.
But it's very possible, and we should have something before the end of the year.
Okay, and what do we need on the Polkadot side? You were saying, like, Beefy is a big piece of this.
Beefy is a critical piece of this, in fact.
So what is Beefy? Like, how do you describe it?
So I describe Beefy as this add-on layer to Grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
Beefy doesn't replace Grandpa by any means. It just adds on to Grandpa and just makes Grandpa proof so much more cheaper to verify.
Nice.
So, for instance, Grandpa today uses this signature scheme called ED25519. There are no precompiles, to use the Ethereum word for this signature scheme on Ethereum. So if you wrote a Solidity code to verify this signature scheme naively, you would run into the millions of gas costs like to verify this.
Okay.
So we need to use signature schemes that Ethereum can verify natively, like ECDSA. So this is what Beefy brings to the table. But also Beefy brings BLS signatures as well. Eventually, when other ecosystems start to adopt BLS, we'll also be able to use BLS proofs. But for now, we can use ECDSA. We can do, you know, Merkle proofs of the chain history.
Mm-hmm.
So another thing is Grandpa actually requires you to have knowledge of the full chain of headers.
Gotcha.
This is it's very inefficient, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if we just had a single header that had some sort of Merkle root, then we could use that to verify the Merkle proofs of previous headers.
Yeah.
And this is much more cheaper in
general. Understood.
So this is a protocol that actually will make bridges a reality. Like, without it, there can be no bridges.
Right.
And like I said, if we have no bridges, this ecosystem will unfortunately just dry up.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's interesting. I mean, I think Composable was waiting on Beefy, but somehow they hobbled together their Centauri bridge without it.
No, so the thing with Composable is they're currently bridged to Kusama. So they have their Polkadot parachain bridge to Kusama using Grandpa, and that's fine.
Like, yeah.
You know, you can do that.
Yeah.
But the problem, you run into problems using this on EVM. And so that's why they don't have an EVM bridge.
Okay.
But I think they also recently released the Cosmos bridge.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And that's
Centauri
also fine
bridge.
Too, because, you know, block space on Cosmos is cheap. Just not an EVM.
Okay, understood. Right. So what's taking Beefy so long?
Honestly, I have no idea at this point. It's been two, three years right now. And I just have to point this out, is that like Beefy is the singular thing that's holding this entire ecosystem back.
Really?
I believe so. You know, there's a lot of liquidity on ETH.
Yeah.
And all that liquidity is basically trapped there because of how high the fees are. And that's why the L2s who are bridged to ETH are able to just take off so fast.
Sure.
You know, and so if we're locking ourselves out of that liquidity by not delivering stuff that will make that happen, then, you know, what happens to us? I would love to see, you know, Parity start collaborating more with external teams to make all this core infrastructure happen.
Right.
And this is something that I'm open to working with Parity on as well, like as being part of the fellowship.
Sure.
You know. I think that Parity shouldn't be solely responsible for critical infrastructure that a lot of teams depend on.
Yeah.
Especially in a case where it's not a critical part of their business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't ship Beefy, like, they're still fine. But if they don't ship Beefy, a lot of parachain teams die. You see how that works?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, they should start to share the responsibility a bit more.
Okay, because you feel like maybe there's no fire under their ass because they're...
Exactly. They don't feel it.
It's kind of cushy, just...
They don't feel it. You know, we're the ones who feel it.
No urgency.
Yeah.
So how do we fix that?
Honestly, it has to start from this sort of forum where, like, we make our problems known. And I think that you guys are already doing something similar. You know, teams like Snowfork, they can't be the only ones pushing for this to happen.
Yeah.
It needs to be a community effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of everyone asking when this, when that, just ask when beefy, you know.
Well, what kind of barriers do you face when you go to parity? Like, could you work on beefy yourself? Like, would you have ideas about that?
I could, actually. I've worked on the client team my whole time at parity. I'm very familiar with the consensus systems. I rely on clients for everything. So there's nothing that stops me from working on beefy, you know.
Okay.
But will they allow it, you know, given the current structure of the team?
What do you mean allow it? Like, well, what sort of gate are they keeping?
Exactly. There are gates to this stuff. You know, for instance, I remember I was talking to Basti about XCMP and how ISMP could form this basis, this foundation for XCMP. At the end of the day, XCMP is just state-based messaging.
Okay.
You know, but then it turns out that they might want to do something, you know, on their own dime, like, you know, of their own design. Which is like, shouldn't you guys be listening to the community, you know, be working with the community, not just off in your own high tower, and then you come down every once in a while, here's XCMV4, and then you just go back up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just my own opinion of these things.
It's kind of a common theme we hear a lot, or it's a common feeling between a parity and the rest, and we constantly have people at parity saying, like, no, we're open to collaboration, we need more actors, but... why are you laughing? Tell me.
It's funny because they say these things, but when it comes to actually putting them in practice, you don't see that happening. This is stuff that I hope that the technical, or I guess the Polkadot Fellowship, will change.
Right.
But honestly, you know, that has to happen quickly. We can't wait around, you know, for parity to do everything for us.
Yeah. You know, I will just put a caveat in here. I think that when we talk about parity, sometimes we can fall in the trap of making parity a single big organization, but I do find that different people in parity have wildly different opinions and they work in different ways. But there are these kind of barrier teams that I feel like we keep coming up against within.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. It's not a single organization, and that's another problem as well. It's lots of different people pulling the cart in different directions.
Yeah.
It's not, there's no consensus, especially from a team that builds consensus systems, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So Ethereum today is where it is because of core teams. External people from the Ethereum Foundation who are contributing to core pieces of the Ethereum infrastructure. So, you know, it doesn't scale if you have one team that does everything.
Yeah, sure.
Fundamentally.
And is there competition in Ethereum as well? Like, if you started building a beefy client and you could compete with the parity team, like, should there be a piece of the pie that you can get there?
I feel like there is incentive structures that, you know, should allow this to happen.
Okay.
But if that was more democratized, then more people would ship stuff and this ecosystem would move a lot more faster.
Okay. So do you think Polkadot V1 solves this in the new stable releases?
I think the stable releases are definitely a pain. A lot of teams have complained about this. I mean, for me, it's not that big of a deal because I'm always working on substrate on a daily basis.
Sure.
But I can imagine, you know, you just change something, it works, you're happy. You come back 2 days later, everything is broken. It's not a great experience.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, some of these pain points will be solved.
Hmm.
But Parity is also doing their best, honestly. Let's give them some props. They ship some of the most impressive tech out here in this ecosystem. And I've been around.
Yeah.
I've been around.
Like, yeah.
We're doing stuff that ecosystems are just dreaming of. Mm. Like, for instance, storage proofs. Like, we already have ISMP today.
Mm.
Parachains can read each other's state. Mm-hmm. You know, parachains can read the relay chain state. In fact, Dakota was talking to me. I had just talked to him about ISMP. And I think just like 5 minutes after, he's saying, look, we can do this thing. It's called bribe chain. You know, we will read the relay chain referendum.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a pool of funds.
Uh-huh.
And then people can bribe this pool of funds on which referendum to vote for.
That's
and I'm
right.
like, yes, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like,
cool.
This is stuff that you can't do anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, so we have the tech. We just need to start using it.
So you said it a few times, ISMP. This is the name of the general message passage protocol that you're building.
Yeah.
What does it stand for?
It stands for the Interoperable State Machine Protocol.
Right, okay.
And basically, the idea there is that we're moving into this modular blockchain world.
Yeah.
It's no longer going to be this monolithic systems. It's going to be a consensus layer, and there'll be the state machines.
Hmm.
So we need to design a protocol that, you know, takes these things into account.
Hmm.
And that's why we designed ISMP the way it is today. And also, we wanted it to be as simple as possible. And this is really, really critical for me because a lot of people have come before us and designed their own, you know, interoperability protocols, IBC, HRMP, XCM, whatever.
Yeah.
We feel that these systems are too complicated.
Okay.
We believe that it could be a lot more simpler. And we need to take a look at what has also come before us, HTTP. It powers billions of applications today.
Right.
You know, you're probably going to watch this on YouTube. What does YouTube use? Simple HTTP.
Get, right.
Post. Mm-hmm. So state machines themselves, they don't require all that complexity. All they need to do is to either request some data or post some data. You know?
Yeah.
And the contents of the data should be up to their discretion. They should decide what they want to post. They can decide if they, oh, I want to post XCM messages. Oh, no, I want to post JSON messages. Oh, I want to post, you know, strings of data. I don't care. No one should care. It should be the responsibility of the applications to decide what they want to do.
Beautiful. Yeah. What in this future, what does the consensus layer look like?
So for parachains, at the least, parachains will use the relay chain as the consensus layer.
Okay.
But as we start to extend to other ecosystems,
yeah,
there will be this shared consensus layer.
How does that work?
So basically through consensus clients, and I guess light clients is what they're most commonly known by.
Yeah.
You can imagine we run a light client of Ethereum on Polkadot.
Hmm.
In some sense, we have merged these two consensus systems. There is now some level of trust that can happen between applications that live on these different consensus systems.
Right. When you finally get all the pieces you need together, are you going to be going through the Bridge Hub, or does that just not matter in this landscape?
I think the Bridge Hub is part of the Polkadot white paper.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's actually a requirement for the Polkadot vision to be complete.
Okay.
And so it does need to exist. But for us, we don't see ourselves being a part of the Bridge Hub vision.
Okay. You just don't need it?
I mean, not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily. I see
ourselves. Is it helpful or no?
I think it's like, you know, it's like Asset Hub, or it's like, you know, the collective parachain. These are all like first party applications.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Teams really shouldn't be building on these first party, you know, stacks.
Oh.
They should go ahead and build their own stuff.
Right.
There needs to be a community. You
right.
know?
Okay.
Parity shouldn't do everything. This goes back to my previous point, right? Like,
yeah.
Parity shouldn't do everything. There needs to be other people saying, oh, hey, here's our ideas about this.
Mm.
What does everyone think about it?
Sure.
You know, competition is good.
Yeah.
So I see ourselves being a community-owned bridge.
Cool. Do you see any other allies in the ecosystem on this mission to build from the community?
Yes, I think a lot of parachain teams are eager and excited to collaborate. Actually, I've been talking to a lot of teams, and I don't think there's been any resistance to this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like everyone says, more is better. More options is good.
Yeah.
You know, Ethereum has so many bridges, bro. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, and there's still more launching every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the more the better for everyone.
Sounds good. But those bridges are more like banks. Like, it's kind of more like the banks in Nigeria, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it
you
is.
You know, like, slowing things down and taking
down.
A cut and,
you know, getting
introducing risk, yeah,
every day,
yeah, yeah.
Exactly right. And this is exactly why I'm in this ecosystem, where it's possible to build these kinds of trustless connections.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, the problem is in the EVM chains, it's actually hard. The EVM constrains what you can do fundamentally.
Yeah.
So they just have to go around with like hacks and shortcuts, and oh, my Oracle and my relayers won't collude. You know, all sorts of stuff. But in the Polkadot ecosystem, it's actually possible to build these uncompromising applications in trustlessness and in security.
Cool.
You know, so that's why I'm right here.
Nice. And back to the last question about allies. Do you see any allies within Parity on this mission?
I think Rob is, yeah, you know, this ecosystem agent, you know, that he recently morphed into.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that that's good for everyone. And
sure.
I really would love to see more of the core team morph into these ecosystem agents, you know, beyond just what they're working on and their tiny little thing, but more trying to collaborate with the ecosystem and push what we're doing forward.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. So when it comes to pushing it forward, maybe you'll have to build your own beefy client. But how long until this vision becomes a reality? I mean, we don't want to really talk about when, but, you know, you're in philosophy and research here. Like, do you see this happening in the next 2 years or 5 years? Or,
I mean, if Beefy happens before the end of the year, then our stuff will happen as well.
Is that what they say will happen, Beefy, by the end of the year?
If I know Parity, I would say let's give him 2024 Q1, Q2 at least, you know.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Not get our hopes up too much.
No, we don't. We learned that long
ago.
We
learned that, yeah,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, doing demonstrations wherever we can, you know, when beefy as well, keeping them on their toes in delivering what they promised, you know.
I'm excited for this future when things just start cascading because people can build anything, right? Like, we have Gavin on stage talking about being unstoppable. But here you are on this podcast talking about being stopped.
That's ironic,
and
right?
And that's a damn shame.
That's ironic.
Yeah.
No, I think Gav also wants to see this bridge thing happen.
And yeah.
I think he's also getting into the conversation with the bridge team as well. So hopefully we'll start to see some real changes, you know.
Yeah. Well, Web3 philosopher, it's a very stimulating conversation. And I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And sharing this vision with us.
Always.
Peace out, man. Thank you.